Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, Blood River Radio audience, I'm really, really excited, really enjoying this interview. I've just treating myself to a treat tonight. I'm just being like a listener like you are, because we have two supreme experts on wind, Mr. Fred Loyster. He is the expert in the world on lethal injections, electrocutions, gas chambers. Matter of fact, I believe he's even worked up close and personal with the California State Penal Institution. I may be wrong there. But, you know, what we're dealing with tonight is we're dealing with that God, that jealous God that will have no other gods before it. And what God is that? That's the God of the Holocaust, that patented Holocaust industrial God. But you know what? Just like the vampire can be slain with a wooden cross through his heart, we're going to slay this God, this jealous God from hell. We're going to put it to sleep. We're going to be barbecuing sacred cow for months. We're putting to rest this myth, this lie from the devil that's been used to beat over the head of white Christian people to make them feel, you know, guilty. And I won't go on long about that. That's about all I'll say about that. But I'm just going to make one quick comment also. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, when I talked to Mr. Loyster a couple of days ago, he said that the laboratory out of Krakow, Poland, also came over. They went behind him and repeated the same test he did, the same experiments, and they came into agreement with him, with his findings 100%, if I'm not mistaken. And with that comment, I'm going to go right back to my people, to the expert of experts, Mr. Fred Loyster, and to Miss Monica Shaver, who's just done me a very gracious favor tonight in lending her expertise in running this interview. So back to you, you dear people.
Okay, thanks, Eddie. Yeah, and the Polish people who followed Fred and did the lab work, they weren't the only ones. There have been other people too, like Germar Rudolph. And I believe there was somebody else that did actual physical forensic work and agreed with everything that Fred found. And I think, you know, we've done a good job in hour one to basically shoot that story out of, you know, the Holocaust story. And quite often it's Jewish sources of information that tell us the truth or corroborate the truth, because they do actually tell us these things. It's just that we have to look for that. And, of course, the mainstream media doesn't really tell us the truth at all, or they will hide it and bury it so well, which is the case for during the Zundel trials. You know, I was saying earlier that I did hear it. It was sort of background noise for me because I wasn't paying too much attention to it. I wish I had have paid attention to it at the time, because if I had read beyond the headlines, I would have learned a lot of things. They actually did report on the Zundel trial in 1985. They reported quite extensively at the very least, and I'm not sure how much they reported in 88. I think they, you know, got their hands slapped or something and said, whoa, we better not do that again. Sure. Because they actually did report accurately what was found. Some of the witness testimonies, for example. And by the way, after the Zundel trials, I don't think there's ever been any more eyewitnesses pulled in onto the stand in a, you know, a quote-unquote Holocaust trial. I might be wrong on that, but, you know, they really got shredded on that, so it was too embarrassing for them. They didn't want to have that happen again because all their testimonies were basically shredded under cross-examination. So, yeah, the story of the Holocaust, it just falls apart as soon as you look deeper into it. And like I say, sometimes, you know, you can look at Jewish sources, like what Fred was saying about the Yad Vashem, Bauer, I think his name was, that basically said, yeah, you're right. You're right, Fred. That's great. So on that note, I'd like to hand it back to you. But, you know, I'd like you to discuss what happened afterwards. Like, obviously, they don't like it when we do these things, when we tell the truth and shame the devil. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I didn't realize it was going to happen, but Ernst Zundel kept asking me every 2 weeks or 3 weeks if they had come after me yet, and I told them no, and I told them no, and when they finally did, they came after me hammer and tongue and with a great passion. They firebombed my house. They filed criminal complaint against me for practicing as an engineer without a license, which there's no law on that. You don't have to be licensed to be an engineer. The people that filed the complaint didn't have standing to do that. They were the Clausfelds from France and Shapiro from upstate New York. In order to make a complaint in Massachusetts or request a complaint, you have to be a citizen of the state of Massachusetts. And obviously, these people weren't. But one of the, we're not only fighting the public lies that they make, but we're also fighting the insidious private lies that we normally don't see. I received a call from a Jewish gentleman from California. He lived in Los Angeles, and he called me up, and this was when I was in the midst of all this trouble I was having because the JDL came after me, and he said, I'm calling you to tell you that I don't like what the Jews in this country are doing to you. He says, you're being persecuted just like the Nazis persecuted us in Europe. He says, that being said, it doesn't change anything. You're a despicable person. And I said, why am I a despicable person? He said, well, you know why you are. You built all those gas chambers in Poland. And I said, wait a minute, back up. What are you talking about? Well, it turns out he received a white paper from the B'nai B'rith that said that I built the gas chambers at Auschwitz, Birkenau, and Majdanek.
Oh, wow, Fred, that's incredible. You built those places. Wow.
Yeah. I said, I must have been a very precocious child. I said, I was born in 1943. And he says, oh, my God, I'm older than you. I said, yeah. I said, I must have been very precocious. If at 1 year old or whatever age I was building gas chambers. I said, would you send me a copy of the white paper, please? No, I better not do that. I'll get in trouble. That was the end of the call. But, I mean, this was going just out to Jews. But they've been hit with the same propaganda that everybody else has, and they believe it. They believe it.
That's right.
Gospel. But the point is, they're being fed the same lies that the rest of the world is. And, the stuff that they force on the rest of the people is just plain ridiculous. When I was brought into court, when the complaints were first issued, I knew everybody in Malden in the court system and the police department because I've lived here all my life. They knew me. Everybody liked me. I made electric chairs. That was a big deal for the cops and for the court. But the point is, when I was finally brought in, I talked with the clerk magistrate who issued the complaint at the request of these New Yorkers and the French people. And he said, Fred, he said, this is a hot potato. He said, I'm not a judge. I'm only a clerk magistrate. He said, I'm going to issue the complaint and let a judge dismiss it. Well, I said, you're a big help. So he did. Then I went in, and my lawyer said to me, he said, Fred, I can't handle your defense on this. He said, I'll lose all my business. He said, let the court appoint you one. So I went in, the judge appointed me an attorney. Well, 2 days later, the attorney told me, he said, I'm going to have to beg off. He says, I've been threatened. Well, I went through six or seven attorneys. The last attorney was the city attorney for the city of Medford, which is the next town to me. And they threatened his wife and his three-year-old daughter. And the judge...
You see, this is Jewish power.
Yeah.
And we're not even allowed to talk about Jewish power without being called anti-Semitic.
Right.
You know, this is their power. They can make life right. miserable for any lawyer that is going to try to defend you or a judge that rules in your favor. They run away from that like they're running away from, you know, a big dragon blowing fire.
I don't blame them because they're afraid for their wives, their lives, and their children. And the judge told the last attorney, he says, I'm not going to let you off. He says, I'm going to require that you do this because, he says, what am I supposed to do? He says, you're the seventh lawyer. And he said, everybody's begging off because they're getting threatened. So I stood up in the courtroom and I says, Your Honor, I said, if the court please, I said, I am going to personally ask that you release him from defending me because I said, I don't want to be responsible for a 3-year-old girl being injured. So the judge says, very well, I'll do that because the defendant has asked. He said, but what are you going to do, Mr. Lucher? And I says, what am I going to do? I said, I'll appear pro se. I'll defend myself. He said, well, he said, I believe you can do that. He says, but the problem is, he said, you know, you cause a problem when you don't have a lawyer because you're supposed to have one. Well, at that point, thanks to
Mr. Loyster, hold that point. We've got to go to another commercial break, right. And we will be right back to Mr. Loyster and Ms. Monica Schaefer right after this brief commercial break. Thank you.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
Go ahead, make my day.
Well, dear people up there, Lord knows I love you so much. You would never believe how excited I was about getting this interview tonight. I'm just now starting to calm down. I mean, I've been walking on the a type where all week I'm so excited, looking forward to this. I think that Blood River Radio is probably the only media outlet in the United States, probably in the world, that would have a show on like this because, as you well know, if we were in Germany, France, Austria, any place like that, our butts would all be in prison right now for telling the truth. But the truth that we're doing, what are we doing? We are leading that sacred cow. That God, that jealous God that will have no other gods before it, the God of the Holocaust, that patented Holocaust industrial God. We're slaying that dude. We're taking that sacred cow to the slaughterhouse right now, and we're butchering it, and we're going to be serving up a sacred cow hamburger to all of our people in Blood River Radio. So just hold on. That's what you're going to get. We're slaughtering that sacred cow. Go back to you, Mr. Fred Leuchter. Continue where he was before we went to the break.
Fred, you still there?
I'm here, yes.
Yeah, go ahead. Because you were just talking about this, these lawyers who get threatened and intimidated, and judges who don't want to take these things on, and that's absolutely a display of their Jewish power. But carry on with what you were saying on that. You know, these they all get threatened, and they it's a very difficult job.
Well, fortunately, fortunately, and through the good graces of David Duke and Ernst Zundel, David Duke made a recommendation that an attorney from Texas come up and defend me, and his name is Kirk Lyons, and he had defended the White Brotherhood. He had defended a Klansman, so he was not afraid of the Jews, nor was he afraid of the court. And he came up, and I spoke with him, and I asked the court for him to be allowed to defend me. Now, there's a problem here because no attorney that's not licensed in any given jurisdiction can practice in that jurisdiction without co-counsel. And there was no co-counsel available, so Kirk Lyons was the only attorney that wasn't licensed in Massachusetts that was allowed to practice in the Massachusetts court system.
Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt. It's a huge problem, but something that you said before break about they don't like you to represent yourself. I know they make it very. I think they lead us to believe that we actually can't. Is that the case in the USA? Because here in Canada, you can theoretically represent yourself, but they sure discourage you from it, and they kind of lead you to believe that you have to have a lawyer. But what's the situation with that in the United States?
It's the same way. You can defend yourself, but the judge has to make a determination whether or not you're lucid and you're competent. Basically, he's dealing with the situation of whether or not you're of sound mind. But the consideration here is that it's almost an immediate immediate ground for appeal. If you get convicted and you defended yourself, you can say you didn't have an attorney and you didn't know what you were doing. And when you go to an appeals court, the appeals court will order a new trial. That's what they're afraid of. And it's a tough situation because without a lawyer, they got to try you. And you know, and I was finished with that crap. I said I don't want to deal with this. Let me at these people. You know, I'm not afraid of them. I wasn't afraid of them when I went to Poland. I'm not afraid of them now. But
yeah, and you know, I have to say, going back to Ernst Zundel, you know, after Robert Folieson says, "Oh mon Dieu," you know, he believes in the Holocaust. You still want to send him? And Ernst Zundel, good on him. He trusted that you would actually report what you found, and that's really big because, first of all, you could have been a person that was not honorable, and even if you had found, you know, this evidence for yourself that, gee, that there couldn't have been any gas chambers, you could have been a dishonorable person and just said, oh, that's going to be too risky to say that. I'm afraid to say that. But you were honorable and honest and reported what you found. And, of course, you have to because you're an expert. And so if you reported something different from what you actually found, that would be the end of your career and also the end of being an expert at any time. But they wanted to destroy your career anyway after you wrote that. And sorry, I pronounce your name differently. I guess I pronounce it the German way, but Leuchter report. And so, you know, then they did all kinds of things, like you say, firebomb your home and then make it very difficult for you. Well, I think they destroyed your livelihood in many states. Didn't they do that?
across the board. I couldn't even get work as a technician. The last few years when I was working, I was working as a livery driver, taking elderly people to doctor's appointments. I worked at a homeless women's shelter, driving their children to school and taking them to the doctors. That's all I could get for work.
Basically, you have to scrape a living together, and your original, line of work, that's it. You're destroyed. They try to destroy your reputation. Right. Like, if a person was just to look up your name and find mainstream media articles, they'll just, they tear you apart. They say, you weren't qualified and all this, and here you are, the one and only expert in the whole world in your field, and yet they say, he wasn't qualified, or he, like you say, practiced without a license. I did a little bit of looking into that, and it seems that most engineers practice without a license in those states where you do not require a license to work as an engineer, and that was the case for you.
Yeah.
And it's the norm, not the exception, to not get a license.
The only thing you need a license for is if you're going to certify a blueprint on a building or a bridge that it isn't going to fall down.
There you go.
You don't need a license. But what happened and what these people do, it's insidious. My cousin and I, my cousin was a woman, she's dead now. We used to, when we were little, I'm talking about when we were 6 and 7 years old, we used to play with another boy who later became the head of the Massachusetts State Police. He was the highest uniformed officer. He was a colonel. And he contacted my cousin and he said, look, he said, I can't say anything to Freddie, meaning me, because Freddie's on trial. He says, but I want you to get a message to him. And she said, all right. And the message was that the state police got a report from both the CIA and from the State Department that there were two Mossad agents in Malden. They didn't know what they were doing. They didn't know what was going on with them, but it had something to do with me in the trial. Well, now I had been, for the last 2 or 3 days before I found that out, I was being followed by somebody, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. I nipped that in the bud very rapidly. The following day, they ran a limousine with tinted windows, tinted so bad that you couldn't even see who was in the car. At any rate, I drove up to a part of Malden that where the streets are very narrow. It's somewhat rural. Which is odd for Malden, but it was an area that was mostly residential. They were following me, and I spun my car out in front of them so they couldn't go forward. The street was too narrow. It was going to be difficult to back up. I got out of my car, and I walked back to the window, to the limo, and I pounded on the window, and the guy ran the window down. There were two very dark-complected Middle Eastern types. I assume they were Mossad. At that point, I pulled out my Model 911A 45 caliber pistol. I cocked it, and I put it up against the driver's nose, and I said, do you gentlemen want something? Well, both of them blanched. They turned white. Then at that point, it seemed like probably 10 or 15 seconds. I'm sure it was only 2 or 3 because when you get these stressful times, you don't know how long, what time really does. They put the car, they put the car into reverse. They backed up over the sidewalk, took somebody's fence out in front of his house. They pulled out.
Mr. Fred, we'll be right back after this break.
Okay.
People, I hope you're enjoying this interview as much as I am. Hang on to your seats. Be right back.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Thank you. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
The COVID relief plan now goes back to the House. The Senate has passed the president's $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package after a marathon overnight session. Senator Patrick Leahy.
The yeas are 50, the nays are 49. The bill as amended is passed.
Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
It's been a long day, a long night, a long year, but a new day has come. And we tell the American people, help is on the way.
The 50 to 49 vote will send the bill back to the House for approval next week. There won't be an increase in the minimum wage in the bill. Republicans say the nearly $2 trillion in spending contains non-pandemic partisan priorities. This is USA Radio News.
When thinking about life insurance, my accident reinforced you never know what tomorrow might bring. That's why I reached out to AccuQuote. AccuQuote helps people find a life insurance policy that meets their needs. Since 1986, they've helped millions of folks save up to 60% on their life insurance by comparing the rates and features of dozens of top-rated life insurance products. A healthy 50-year-old non-smoker can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $45 a month. A 60-year-old under $120 a month. Longer or permanent terms are available. Even if you already own life insurance, you really need to check out my friends at AccuQuote. Don't worry about health issues. Remember, they help me. As a pastor, I'm concerned about your soul and helping you to make sure your family is taken care of. Life insurance is more affordable now than ever, so don't make them wish you'd made that call. 877-437-4781. Call now, 877-437-4781. 877-437-4781.
Rates, policy points, and availability vary by state.
Good news for those who are tired of being frozen in the cold. Forecasters say warm weather is coming for the central and eastern United States. This weekend in the Midwest, temperatures will be up to 30 degrees above normal. Across the northern plains, high temperature records will be challenged. The heat wave will continue through Tuesday. The Labor Department has announced great unemployment numbers for February. With more, here's USA Radio Network's Lance Pry.
Hiring in America boomed in February as restaurants and other hospitality businesses reopened, adding 379,000 people to U.S. payrolls and fueling renewed growth. The Labor Department said Friday U.S. employers added jobs for the second straight month in February, in what marks a sharp pickup from earlier this winter. The jobless rate is well down from the 14.8% peak in April of 2020 and is now at 6.2%. From the West Coast USA Radio News Bureau, I'm Lance Pry.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Being this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, give me a bunk.
Well, people, welcome back to this show. Just having a wonderful, wonderful time tonight. We still have almost a half an hour left. Before we, Mr. Fred continues, I'd like to just interject something that we talked about. I talked to Mr. Fred a couple of days ago, and I'm going to make a statement. I'm going to repeat something he said. Something that a lot of people may not be aware of, we've talked about it on this show before, that when World War II started, there was two forces that invaded Poland. The Germans, the German army invaded Poland coming from the west. Well, guess what? Russia, the Soviet Union under Stalin, invaded Poland from the east, and they pretty much split that nation in two and a half. You know, it's been said, and eyewitnesses will back this up, that Fred and I were talked about last week. Stalin was there in that part of Poland before the Germans ever got there, before Germany invaded Poland in Operation Barbarossa. You know, also, Stalin had time after they came in and at the end of close to the end of the war, when the Russian, when the Red Army drove the German forces out of Poland, they were there and had plenty of time, and eyewitnesses will back this up. Stalin instructed his people to build these fake chambers, these fake gas chambers, and there were eyewitnesses to back that truth up. Am I right or wrong, Mr. Fred?
Well, it wasn't so much the Russians; it was the fact that our General Eisenhower had the American military build the. This was at Dachau. There were no gas chambers. They built one at Dachau. And I found out by accident that happened, because when I was inspecting the facilities, because Ernst Zundel sent me there for my second report, when I got there, none of the dimensions of the alleged gas chamber that was there matched the measurements that were taken by Congress when it came over to visit the gas chamber. And it turned out that Ernst Zundel had a newspaper article that said that they built a phony gas chamber to show Congress. After Congress left, they tore it down and they built a permanent one, a beautiful one with ceramic tile and everything else. It was still a joke. It wasn't connected to anything. Could never have worked. But the bottom line is none of the dimensions were right, and they probably figured that nobody was ever going to check it, because who was going to question Eisenhower and a bunch of Jews? But that's exactly what happened. I questioned it. And how we found out that it's a shame, because Eisenhower, many people respected him. He was our president. And not only was he guilty of what happened at Ryland Meadow when he murdered all those POWs, the German POWs, and he wanted to change their status to criminal from prison of war, and the military wouldn't let him. But then he turns around and he builds the phony gas chamber. So, yeah, it's the insidious way these people work is just plain ridiculous.
You know, Mr. Fred, he did have their status changed. He did get by with changing their status from prisoner of war to disarmed enemy combatant. So what a piece of slime ball he was. You know, when he graduated West Point in the West Point yearbook, they called him, his nickname was the Swedish Jew, and with good reason. Miss Monica, would you like to chime in on that?
Yeah, my father was actually in one of those camps, and he was one of the lucky ones that did make it out alive. Otherwise, I wouldn't be talking to you now. But when I was in prison in Germany, so many of my fellow prisoners, they complained incessantly about the food, but I never complained. I was actually very grateful for the food we got, because I was always thinking about my father and how they were so hungry. I mean, they were given such very few calories, and German villagers nearby, if they were wanting to help out these soldiers by putting, you know, a piece of bread through the fence, the orders were to shoot them on sight, you know, by the guards of these fields. It was just nothing but fields. You know, when I was over in Germany, and I think it was about 2009, my father, we were driving in my cousin's car, and he went very quiet, and then he points out the window at this field. It was near Bad Kreuznach in Germany, and he says, this is where it was, right there, that field. And that field was presently, I can't remember if it was corn or grapes, I think it was corn, just a big field, a big expanse, and he says, that's where it was. And, you know, he didn't talk about it often, but once in a while he told us about it, and they had nothing. They dug holes into the ground with their spoons to get out of the elements, like just to make depressions in the ground to be able to get out of the wind and snow. And, you know, he didn't smoke, and I think they had a ration of one or three cigarettes a day, and so he traded these cigarettes for the limited rations of food with other prisoners, because I guess the addiction to nicotine is even stronger than the desire for food if you're in those conditions. So anyway, yeah, that's these camps where I think about 1.5 million Germans died. And you know, just the one place where my father was, he says that between 25% and 33% of the men in that field, that camp where he was, died. Every day the truck would come by and haul out the bodies. And speaking of trucks coming by, I mean, this is just out of the blue, but I'm connecting it to the present day. If we really were in a pandemic, there would be a truck coming by every day, and the driver or co-driver would be shouting, bring out your dead, bring out your dead. That's not happening. But anyway, I don't want to change the subject, but it just flashed into my mind about the trucks picking up dead bodies every day from the camp where my father was. But yeah, back to Fred, you spent time in jail too, and that was in Germany, wasn't it? I was surprised to hear about that the other day.
And essentially, I mean, I was there was a I was charged with defaming the dead, but effectively, what they were doing is they were dirtying my skirt, because I was brought over to Germany to testify in Ernst's upcoming court case, and I was qualified by three German judges as an expert witness, and they were going to allow me to testify on the alleged gas chambers not being gas chambers, which would have been really remarkable. It's unfortunate that it didn't happen, because that would have cleared the way for a lot of other people like yourself, because there would have already been evidence in. But what they did is they worked out this deal with Trina Marker, who ran a television show. She was like Donahue was over here, and she asked me to come over and speak about the electric chair. And I said, fine, the electric Stuhl. The Germans are big on electric chairs. And I told her before I came, I said, look, I'm not going to talk about the Holocaust. I said, I'm very careful what I say when I'm in Germany. The only thing I ever spoke about when I was in Germany was the fact that I was hired as an expert witness by the court. I went to Poland. I wrote a report and what that report said. And then how I was persecuted by the Jews for doing this. And how I was charged as a criminal and such. And so I'm very careful about what I say. So, but the three police officers came from Weinheim, and they came because they wanted to arrest me and put me in Mannheim prison. When they got there, they identified themselves and they told me I would have to come with them. And I says, why do I have to come with you? Can I see the warrant? Well, we don't have a warrant. I says, then how do you expect to take me to custody and take me to halfway across Germany? You're crossing three or four states. And they said, well, we're going to do it because that's why we came. I says, well, I'm not going. How do you like them apples? At that point, one of the officers pulled out a Volvo 380 and shoved it in my face. And I said, you just made your point. I guess I am going with you. But you understand... What's happening now is I'm being kidnapped. I'm not being arrested.
That's right.
And when I got to, after I was held overnight, then I was taken to the judge. I saw Judge Bauer, who was the one that wanted me there. And I said to Judge Bauer, I said, have you issued a warrant for my arrest? No. I says, then why am I here? He says, because we wanted you here. I says, this how you do it? You kidnap somebody and bring them halfway across Germany? You know, Schreinemacher threw a fit, but they wouldn't let me get on the television.
Mr. Fred, Miss Monica, we have to go to our final break, and we'll be right back. People, hold on. We're listening to Miss Monica Schaefer, Mr. Fred Leuscher. Be right back.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death, like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
as attorney Jason Robb, general counsel of the Knights Party based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more by listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
Well, Blood River Radio family, welcome back. This is our last segment of this show. I'm just sitting here spellbound. I've been mesmerized listening to this expert of all experts. People like to say, you know, we had about a year ago, Miss Monica and Miss Berta Voice of Germany had, we did about 6 hours on the Holocaust. We are following this up with even a greater, we set them up. This is the left hook. Why are we doing this? We're fighting people. We're fighting the devil himself, the accuser, the adversary, like I talked about the first of the show. You know, the Jew, like it or not, don't argue with me. Argue with the King James Bible and go look where Jesus Christ told the Jews is that they were their father, the devil. They are their father, the devil, the sons of the devil. And they do what their father, the devil, did. And the devil, the greatest thing he probably does is lie. He lies, lies, lies. Listen, if we can, and Miss Monica and I have talked about this before, if we can somehow destroy this linchpin, the Holocaust is the linchpin by which all other lies that these Jews and these Satanists and these Bolsheviks have put over on us and our school children, if we can even get a partial number of people in the United States and hopefully the world to realize that this has been one huge devil's lie. It's the devil's lie of all lies. This Holocaust, my God, it's caused us so much pain and suffering. That's why we keep hammering it, to get rid of this linchpin of all lies. And with that, I think we've done a pretty good job tonight, and we're not going to be through. We're going to bring these people back on again real soon. But anyway, back to you, Miss Monica and Mr. Fred. Continue on, please.
Yeah, you are absolutely right, Eddie. This is the linchpin lie. If you ask the Jews themselves what's their identity, they will inevitably talk about they're being persecuted forever and the Holocaust. In this day and age, it's the Holocaust, right? They identify with that. That is their identity. And they fear the truth so much that they go to all lengths to make sure that, you know, that the truth doesn't come out into the mainstream and whatnot, but they're losing. They are losing. I am confident that they are losing this one because they are just, it's untenable. Every lie will collapse under its own weight, and that's what's happening now. You know, when they trot out more survivor stories every year and they're forcing this into the education more and more, more museums popping up everywhere, and ordinary people are starting to wonder, wait a minute, what's about this special about this one, and what about all those other actual genocides that did take place? And, you know, what I would say is special about this one, it's the one that did not happen. So they do fear the truth. And get back to Fred, your story, because I think people were curious what happened next after this judge just did something just completely illegal, just telling you there's no warrant for your arrest, but we wanted you here. So basically those guys kidnapped you. So what happened after that?
Well, the interesting thing, I said, he said he was going to send me to Mannheim prison. And the interesting thing about it was, I said, look, I said, if there's no warrant, and I said, there's no charge, he said, well, we're going to investigate the charge. He says, we'll come up with the charge. I said, well, in the meanwhile, I says, why don't you wait till you come up with the charge, and then let me know. And I says, let me leave. He said, no, I can't do that. I'm sending you to Mannheim. I said, how can you do that without a charge or without a conviction? He said, I'm committing you. Well, there's a difference in being sentenced and being committed. And committed means you're going to be there till we're ready to do something with you. And that's what they did. And
it sort of reminds me of being committed to a mental institution, like an asylum or something, but right, being committed.
Right. You know, if this was in France 300 years ago, it would have been a letter of cachet, and I would have been sitting in the Bastille someplace.
Yeah.
Because it was absolutely no difference. But the whole point of this thing is the Jews wanted to dirty my skirt so that when I testified in court for Ernst, they would be able to say, well, he's a criminal. He was in prison.
Exactly.
That was the intent of it. And I was there for 3.5 months. We managed to force a bail hearing. When I got into the bail hearing, there wasn't much discussion at all. They just advised my attorney that I was going to be sent back, and they were not going to allow me to have bail. And that being the court, my German was not good, but it was good enough for me to understand that. And I turned around to my attorney. His name was Heil Hammond. And I turned around and I says, what the hell's going on here? What kind of a kangaroo court is this? Well, one of the judges, they all understood English, and I didn't know this. They started to speak to my attorney in German, and then they turned and said, never mind, we'll talk to your client directly. And I says, what the hell's going on here? I says, I'm a legitimate businessman. I'm not a criminal. I don't have a criminal record. I said, I'm a certified expert for court. I said, I'm in prison illegally. And I says, you're going to send me back? And they said, well, would you come back if you had bail? I said, of course I would. I said, because I want to talk to the court and I want to find out why I was here. So they agreed to give me bail. The bail was something better than 20,000 marks. My attorney had to contact Ernst to get the bail money, and I thought they were going to send me back to a holding cell. Instead, the judges took me into their chambers and gave me coffee and cakes. you can see what they thought of the whole thing. I left immediately after that, even though some people wanted me to stay and speak. I left immediately, and afterward, I was going to come back in a year, and when I was talking to my attorney, I was making arrangements to come back, and I got a telephone call from a lawyer in Germany who was the lawyer for an inmate that was in prison with me. And inmates stick together. You don't have to be a criminal. You just have to be an inmate. And the inmate had the lawyer convey a message to me, and that was, don't come back. The district attorney was on vacation. He cut his vacation short, came back, but it was too late. I had already gotten out of Germany. They fired the three judges that gave me bail. They issued an arrest on site warrant for me, and they of course revoked my bail. And there was a contract to kill me out with the Jewish mafia in Mannheim prison. Well, I told my attorney this, and the attorney that called me said, and Mr. Lucia, this conversation never took place. And I told my attorney, I said, I'm not coming back. I said, because I believe what he was taught. He said, that couldn't be possible, Fred. He said, they couldn't revoke your bail without telling me. Well, I said, convey my apologies to the court. Well, he went in. Before he could open his mouth and convey my apologies, they said, there was a mistake made and there's some confusion here. Your client's bail was revoked. There is an arrest on site warrant for him. And of course, the court wasn't going to comment on whether or not there was a contract to kill me out. out on me. But the point is that if the other two things were right, that most likely was right. And my attorney said to me, he said, I don't understand how this could even happen. He said, they didn't tell me that they revoked your bail. They didn't tell me that there was a warrant for your arrest. And it's a year later. It was a year and 2 weeks later, I think. So I didn't go back. I don't know whether there's a statute of limitations, and I don't know how they would view that in any case, because the statute probably stopped running when I left. So there's probably still more time on it. But, I mean, the bottom line is I don't know that they really actually wanted to try me, because I don't know if they want to get me in a German court and let me open my mouth and tell them what I think of their stupid Holocaust.
Well, you see, that brings us right full circle to what I mentioned at the very beginning, is that you were invited to testify at our trial in 2018, but of course my lawyer was astute enough to make the invitation that you would appear by video camera.
Right, yes. We had talked about it, and he knew I couldn't come, but because they would have done the same thing to me that they were doing to you.
Yes.
But the bottom line is that the powers that be in Germany that are controlling the legal system really don't want me to testify.
That's right.
They fear the truth.
They fear the truth so much that they don't want somebody like you on the stand.
They may put me in the prison.
Miss Monica.
But they're
Fred,
not
going to. I have a quick.
Sure.
Yeah.
Miss Monica and Fred, I have a quick question. It's probably a rhetorical question. Where on earth, when you were in prison there, Mr. Fred, where the hell was the American consulate? Where was your congressman? Where was your senator? I have to ask that.
The consulate was a nice guy. He came and he told me, he says, you're accused of breaking a German law, so therefore we can't help you. I'll be back in 6 months to make sure they haven't killed you. And he left.
It's exactly the same when I was there, actually. They can come once every 6 months. And their duty is to make sure that you're not being tortured or starved or whatever, but they can't interfere in the law of the land.
Right, right. So, you know, I mean, that's the way it is. But, I mean, if they ever, you know, they couldn't stop me from testifying if I'm testifying on my own behalf.
Fred, we're just about out of time, and we will be bringing you back as we've planned beforehand. But, Mr. Fred, would you like to make a final comment or two before you go? And then after you do that, and we still have time, we'll let Miss Monica make her final comment before we bring you on for the next show. Go ahead, Mr. Fred.
I'll just say it quickly. It was an honor to be here with all you people, and I think this is my feeling about you and Monica and everyone else. History is written by the victors. The truth is written by the fearless. And I think you, all of you, are fearless, particularly you, Monica. Well,
thank you so much.
Thank you, Fred. And you have been such an integral part of getting the truth out there. I mean, the report you wrote, that was just huge. It's an integral part of it all. So thank you for your courage and, that you just carry on and you haven't backed down. That's the big part.
Thank you.
Amen. And we have another surprise guest. We're not going to let him know who it is because we don't want him to choke on a chicken bone before he comes on. But you know what? This show has been everything I hoped it for. It would be. And I appreciate you people coming on, Mr. Fred, Miss Monica. Thank you so much for coming on. This made my day, made my month. I'll be getting back in touch with both of y'all wonderful people very soon. Thank you so much. Thank you, Miss Bethany, for bringing us on tonight, keeping us on. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Blood River Radio people. God bless you. God bless you. God bless you. Please pray for us that we stay on the air. We'll be seeing you on March the 13th, same time, same place, God willing. Good night, everyone.